Okay, we're going to go ahead and we're back in session. Item number 15, the information report. I will turn that over to Ms. Kaplan, the Williams Valenzuela Casey lawsuit settlement, fourth quarter.
Well, and I will turn this over to Mr. Seaman because this is his chance to do a presentation and present.
That's true. And I am proud to announce to the board that we had zero complaints under the Williams Valenzuela settlement.
Okay, thank you.
For the fourth quarter.
For the fourth quarter. Thank you. Okay, we are on to item number 23, the information report regarding the local control funding formula and the impact on the District 2013-14 adopted budget. I turn this over again to Ms. Kaplan.
Well, tonight we're giving you lots of information, lots of things to ponder and think about. But as we shared with you when we presented our budget, that we kind of had to pick one of three ways of presenting it, not knowing what was going to actually come out of our governor's office. And now we have more information. So we've asked Manoj and Dr. Rob, we call him, or Dr. Copeland, to kind of show you where our best thinking is today and the impact that it will have on the budget that we presented to you a couple weeks ago.
Well, good evening. Tonight's really about, with the first presentation, this one's about change, and there's a change in the way that we're going to be funded from the state, and what we want to do tonight is just introduce you to some, say goodbye to some old terminology, and introduce you to some new terminology that I think will be around for a while. If it's any evidence or any indication of the last time, the revenue limit was around for quite some time. And so we're going to talk about some new vocabulary, some new ways that we're going to be funded. We want to go into some of the differences in the different funding components of LCFF. We also want to talk about what it looks like for our district and what it looks like for other districts, because it is going to be different. Always before, we'd compare ourselves to other districts and say, you know, they received a COLA 3.5%, we got 3.5%, everybody usually gets the same amount of money. That's going to change. So that's going to require a shift in the way that we think. And then to talk about next steps and where we go from here. So to begin the presentation, I'm going to have Manoj come up and give us a little background of where we were with the revenue limit and then where we are with LCFF.
Okay. So basically, as you know, the concept of funding for our education for the state was revenue limit. This revenue limit came about from in 1970, early 1971-72. So this concept of revenue limit has been there for the last 40 years. It has gone a lot of changes. There were times it was tied to state revenues. 1988, what happened was revenue limit was tied to state revenue. So 40% of the state revenue had to be spent on education. So this component went through multiple changes, and right now it is as is. The revenue limit is basically there is a base funding for all students. It's categorized by if it's a unified school district or a union school district or an elementary school district. More or less for all the unified school district, the base revenue limit is same. There are some historical differences. The state early 2000, they tried to equalize those revenue limit. But there was never a successful effort to have a uniform revenue limit across all districts. But even with that, we have just about plus minus $25 difference on the base revenue limit for all districts in the state right now. So the component of revenue limit is there is a base revenue limit that we had. There were additional revenues which were added to the base revenue limit, things like meals for the needy, beginning teacher salaries. These were added over the last 10, 15 years. The other component that was added on the base revenue limit is the class size penalties. So if any school districts exceeded certain class size, there was class size penalties that were imposed on the base revenue limit. Last 7 or 8 years, the thing that has cropped up on the revenue limit is what we call the deficit factor. The state said that the base revenue limit would be about $6,000. The state didn't have adequate funds when the economy went down, so they imposed a deficit factor. They didn't fund us. Last year, 12-13, the deficit factor went up as high as 22%. And this year, when we built our budget for 13-14, we built it based on 19.6%. That element is going to go away as we move to what we call the local control funding formula. There were other adjustments that were made on the revenue limit, which was the unemployment insurance revenue. The state backfilled us for the unemployment insurance that the school district paid, and also for PERS. If the PERS rate was over 13.02%, the state paid us money. If it is less than 13.02%, which is now, the state took money from the revenue limit. Over and above that, there were what we call the categorical revenues. That was one of the feature. Last year, we had about 65 to 80 categorical revenue. The money was coming in. At some point of time, we had more than 80 categorical revenues early 2000. Mid-2000, there was an effort to basically condense all the categorical revenues. Some of them were called categorical block grant. A lot of professional development categorical revenues were blocked into what we call the professional block grant. So what has happened over the last 40 years, legacy, a lot of compliance, a lot of complexity has grown into the revenue limit. It has become extremely difficult for the state to manage and distribute the funds along with the deferrals. So the intent of the governor, present governor, last year when he came in, he introduced what we call the weighted student funding formula. He said, let's simplify the system. Let's put the money where the kids deserve the money. Again, as Mr. Cox mentioned, that it's kind of a pendulum. When the revenue limit was introduced, all districts had different levels of funding. The revenue limit was introduced to equalize the funding across different districts. Now we see with the introduction of the local control funding formula, it's kind of moving away where different districts would have different funding limits. So with that, we transition to what we call the local control funding formula, LCFF in short. The components of local control funding formula, again, similar to the base revenue limit, there will be a base grant, which is uniform across all districts. Instead of its district, it's by grade span. So for example, they broke the K-12 system into K-3, 4-6, 7-8, and 9-12. So each grade span have a base revenue limit, which is called the base grant, attached to each kid. Over the base grant, there is the concept of what we call the supplemental grant. The supplemental grant and concentration grant are the differentiators. Supplemental grant and concentration grant are meant for certain demographics of students, not all students. The students who are eligible for supplemental grant and concentration grant, which we'll explain later, are the low income, which is measured by how many students are in the free and reduced meals program, foster youth, and English learners. So those are the three elements that if the demographics of the particular districts are high on those three elements, they would get the supplemental grant and additional concentration grant. So when the governor introduced the budget, he had different percentages for supplemental grant and concentration grant. When the budget was enacted, the supplemental grant and the concentration grant mix changed a little bit. So those are the supplemental grant and the concentration grant are similar to the categoricals. Over and above that, what we have is called the augmentation. One of the augmentation that we still have is the class size reduction. The CSR program is similar to the CSR program that we have right now, except the amount that we get per ADA is less. And one of the constraints on the CSR program is we can have a max of 24 per class size. But right now, there is a stipulation that if one class size exceeds 24, you lose the whole CSR amount. Right now, as is, the conditions are that if a class size exceeds the 24 or 32-1, you lose or incur a penalty just for that class size. But in this class size reduction model, you lose the entire funding for CSR if one class size exceeds 24-1. 24-1? So that's the CSR augmentation. The other augmentation that we have is called the CTE, which is the Career Technical Education. That's meant for 9-12 grade kids. There are some add-ons to the LCFF. The add-ons are the transportation. We'll still get the transportation money that we received in previous years. As long as we are still providing transportation, there is no COLA. And the other item that's an add-on is called what we call the TIG, Targeted Instructional Improvement Grant, because that was imposed by the initiative process, so they could not take it out from the LCFF model. So that's the LCFF model in short. We still have some separately funded programs like the nutritional programs, nutritional meal programs, special education funding, the after-school education and funding, the ACES program that we have in the districts, that's separately funded. And the lottery and those kind of funding is still separate from the local control funding formula. So this transition is going to happen this year, starting this year. There are two phases to the transition. What the governor said is there will be an 8-year implementation phase, although not this is not in statute. He expects that the LCFF funding for each district should be fully funded by 2021. The purpose of this is he's trying to make the district funded whole as we were funded in 2007-08, adjusted for COLA. So whatever funding we had in 2007-08, he expects us to bring to the same level of funding in 2007-08, adjusted for COLA, and that will take 8 years based on how the economy goes. And after the fully funded phase, it will be a COLA percentage that would be added on the LCFF. So the way the calculation works is basically we take the base year funding, 2012-13, we add what we call, we have to figure out what we have are the entitlement targets for our LCFF. That target is set for 2021, 8 years from now. And again, as I mentioned, it's the demographics of student population and the state appropriation for LCFF. One of the challenge of LCFF that we have now is for the revenue limit, it's easier for us to do a multi-year projection. We know what the COLA is for 1 year from now or 2 years from now. It's not the same under LCFF because the governor, because the state is not going to tell us how much they are going to fund the LCFF gap for 2014-15 and 15-16. This year they mentioned that, as we'll see in the subsequent slide, that they're going to fund the 12% of the gap. We don't know what the gap funding is going to be for the next 2 years. And that's where multi-year funding is a little difficult. Okay. Just kind of choked a little bit, I think. Okay. There we go. So, we'll go over this again. This I wanted to give you an overall picture of how the entitlement target for 2021 looks for West Covina Unified. So this is what the entitlement target is for West Covina. We'll get a base grant of $67 million. When we add the supplemental grant, the concentration grant, and the augmentation and the add-on, we'll end up with $83 million. This is the target for 2013-14. Funding entitlement target again for 2021. We received $58 million last year, 12-13. So the way it works, the gap is about $25 million. That's the gap between $83 million and $58 million that the governor is trying to fund. He is trying to get us to $83 million by end of 2021. What the state said that they are going to fund about 12% of the gap this year. So if you take 12% of $25 million, that's the $3 million gap that the governor is going to fund this year. When we add the $3 million to $58 million, it adds up to $61 million. So under LCFF, we are going to get $61.3 million in 13-14.
The $83 million is cost of living adjusted?
It's cost of living adjusted for 13-14. So each year, they are going to adjust that with the cost of living. So next year.
This is not a projected out for 8 years, like cost of living rate.
Right.
Like going from 58 million up to 67 million.
Right. So the way they are doing it, they are just doing the funding gap this year, and then next year they're going to recompute the funding gap with the COLA adjusted. Okay? So the whole intent for developing that entitlement target is to just figure out what the funding gap is as of today, and they're going to fund that. So bulk of it, again, just like our base grant in revenue limit, is the base grant in LCFF, and the differentiators are the supplemental grant and the concentration grant.
What was the CTE again?
It's the career technical education. Career technical education.
Thank you very much.
And it's only meant for 9 to 12. So now that we know we are going to get about $3 million this year for LCFF, how does that look when we break down? So going to the next slide, this is the basically grade span per ADA grant for base grant and augmentation. So each kid in K through 3 will get about $6,900 for as a base grant. And you add the constant augmentation, the augmentation for CSR is 10.4% and the CTE is 2.6%. The supplemental grant is 20% of the adjusted base grant, and the concentration grant is 50% of the adjusted base grant. But the concentration grant is only eligible, the threshold is 55%. So if a district has the population of demographics where the free and reduced English learners and foster youth is greater than 55%, you get concentration grant only for those kids which exceed 55%. So not all free and reduced kids would get that concentration grant. It's only if you exceed that 55% threshold you'll be eligible for concentration grant. So with that, let's look at how it works out for West Covina. What we have in the slide is basically the ADA of average daily attendance of West Covina for grade span basis. When we multiply that by our base grant, we end up with $67.16 million for the base grant. The augmentation for the CSR and the CTE works about $2.5 million. This is how the simplified way to kind of depict how the calculation would work. There are some complexities in the calculation, just so that. For the supplemental grant, again, the methodology is the same. We have to figure out our unduplicated count of low-income English learners and foster youth on a grade span basis, and which for us, based on the data we have right now, it's about 67% that we have on that category. So we'll get supplemental grant for the 67% of our kids, and then going to the following slide, for the concentration grant, we get concentration grant for about 12% of our kids. That's the difference between 67% and 55%. Concentration grant is about $4.18 million. This is again to show you how the funding gap works. As of this year, our revenue limit last year was $58 million. The target entitlement based on today's data is $83 million. It will be adjusted again year to year based on if the COLA is available or not. The LCFF funding gap is $25 million. The state came in and funded the funding gap with 12%, and that's about $3.06 million. So that's what adds up to our $58 million plus $3 million, so we'll end up with an LCFF funding of about $61 million state funding this year. And there are other state fundings which are like the lottery money, which is separate. With that, I'll give us.
So, you know, the question came up with the COLA. If by some chance every year there was a COLA for the next 8 years of 9%, I mean, it would never happen, but if it was, with a rule of 72, that at the end of the 8 years, our target would then become $166 million. So that will move according to the COLA. Our base will always stay the 58.33, and the funding of the gap will be funded every year, depending on whatever percentage they come up with. I want to give you a little example how these are just three imaginary districts. I will show you where we are on here, but three districts, all base year, they all start about $6,500. Depending on the eligible students, their target could be much different. A low district with maybe 1%, their target is going to be $8,000 per student all the way up to $11,300. based on our percentage of about 67%, we're kind of in the $9,400 range per student. That's the target for us. This is how it looks for next year. So this is going to become very important when we hear about other districts and they say, you know, our district received this year an additional $576 per student, but we only received $312 per student, or another district a very little amount. So when other districts around us, and all districts are different, are possibly giving, dare I say, raises or adjustments to the salary schedules, it could be dependent on how much money they received this year based on where they are. Are they in a low, medium, or high, one of these examples? With this new system, there is a lot of volatility with the LCFF. The first one is political. Will this focus on education be sustained? For the last 4 or 5 years, education has really been hit hard. And this year, education is a winner, and other parts of the economy, or the state economy, are not. So will that be able to be sustained for 8 years? And, you know, with Proposition 19, we were always guaranteed. We knew we had a Prop 98 guarantee. Well, here, we don't. And priorities may change within the state. And also, the other volatility is the economic. You know, this has been a good year. And will that California economy hold up? This LCFF model assumes a growth of 5 to 7% per year for the next 8 years. I can't remember a time when that's happened for 8 years in a row. So we need to be aware of that as we do our multi-year projections. And don't get me wrong, this is good news. The budget that they've come out with is good news. And the conference that we went to with School Services of California said this is where in the past sometimes the budget was built on, you know, the immediate budget was built on some numbers that maybe were a little lofty or with, you know, imaginary revenues. This one is pretty realistic. So it is good news, but I think we should be very cautious as we look at the out years. State revenue forecast for just going through 16-17, this is from the Department of Finance and the governor. They actually project that revenue for 13-14, state revenue will go down about $1 billion. That's $1 billion with a B. School Services of California and some other agencies feel that estimate is low. So in this instance, this case, the governor is taking a conservative approach to the revenues for the year that we're in right now, 13-14. But you can see how this model's built on revenues going up to $104 billion, $110 billion, and $116 billion. This is an interesting model here on page 14 because that $6,500 becomes the base. And as we received a 12% increase in our gap this year, and next year, you know, maybe it's another 12, 15, or 17%. But let's say the third year out, the economy takes another hit. The higher up you are, the greater your fall is down back to the bottom. And so districts that are high LCFF need to be very careful about how they allocate their dollars in any given year because it could be taken away quickly. Those at the bottom, little gain, but little risk of falling back down there. So I think this is an important visual. When we came to you about a month ago and we had to approve a budget, we did not have a state budget. We didn't know the funding model that was going to take place. We took our advice from school services that said we believe that if it goes the revenue limit model, there will be COLA. And there will also be some pay down in the deficit reduction of what they owe you. And so we calculated an increase of about 5.8%. When we finally adopted this LCFF, and many districts didn't do that. Many districts just said, we're only going to prepare a budget that shows the COLA and not the deficit reduction. We didn't feel that was realistic. And so for many districts, when LCFF came through, the difference between a basic COLA and LCFF could be, you know, $2.5 million. In our case, because we already projected the COLA and the deficit reduction that we would be funded on that, when LCFF came through, we're actually $410,000 less than our projection because we kind of assumed that we would be getting more money. We just didn't know what it was going to look like. For a budget this size, $410,000, and we still feel we're pretty conservative on some of our estimates of our unduplicated counts with free and reduced students, EL students, and foster youth. So we feel we can make that up, but I think that's an important concept, is other districts maybe from their adopted budget to now LCFF maybe showing huge increases. We knew there would be something, and so we put it in there. So total revenues are down from adopted budget, $410,000, and it shows that our ending fund balance, instead of $15.45 million, will be just a little over $15 million. Important to note, and I think Manoj mentioned it, in the past, we would use the school services dartboard for multi-year projections. They would talk about in the out years, you would use this COLA, estimated COLA, and that COLA would change. Now we have a new model, LCFF, and that second line up from the bottom is the projected revenue that school services forecast using their model for West Covina Unified School District as compared to the DOF model, which is built on much more optimistic revenues. And so we need to be careful as we plan, because you see the difference there. There's almost a $3 million difference between what school services says is their realistic and what they feel is a good projection versus what the DOF, and it compounds. So in the out years, quite a bit. Overall, we didn't put it on here, but even with the school services model, we're deficit spending a little over $1 million a year. Keep in mind that in the last years, we were deficit spending close to $4 million. So this increase that we received of $3 million, while it is very welcomed and very appreciated, it's closed our gap. It's closed our deficit spending gap, and it came at a good time. Board Member Jimenez said, you know, for years, we were right at that fiscal cliff, and we didn't go over, and it was because of decisions that were made to keep the district fiscally solvent. And so we were close, and our deficit spending was getting much larger. Well, that has been reduced now. So that's good news. Next steps, there's many components to this. We're going to workshops locally on the LCFF funding model. There's going to need to be integration with the local control and accountability plans. As Manoj mentioned, there were 60 categorical programs. Those programs are basically gone, and they're rolled into these grants. However, the need is still there, and that will be a discussion that we'll need to have with you as the board to decide how do we want to spend that money. Now that there aren't some regulations on certain funds, do we still continue with that? There will be some changes in the way that we report to the state with the accounting system, the ways that we report our attendance as far as before it was by grades. We're now going to have to make sure we have the free and reduced counts, the EL counts. It's very important from those charts that we count every student, because it means that we want to be funded appropriately and not leave anything on the table. And then compliance regulations to make sure that, as Manoj mentioned with CSR, if you're over by one in one class, you lose that funding. And for our district, that could be over $1.7 million. So that will not happen, but there will be other compliance issues that we have. So with flexibility is nice, but there still is this accountability pieces as far as EL students. How long can they, you know, can they be an EL student before they have to transition? Those are all pieces that we'll be working with Ed Services and Colleen to make sure that we're in compliance on those issues. A lot of information. I'd like to open it up for questions now, if you have any.
No, not at this time.
On the supplemental, or excuse me, separately funded programs, are we going to be
they're going to separately state them, separately present them, give us this money. Have they done anything to close that gap between what the actual minimum mandated costs are with respect to the funding, or is there going to still be considerable gap in that? Have you had a chance to look at that? Or?
Right. On the separately funding programs, those are primarily the special education, the nutritional services program, and the after-school education and funding. There are other fundings, which are the mandates that you mentioned. There is a mandate block grant that the governor has introduced, but there is no separate funding for each and every mandate. So what he has taken, basically he has clubbed all the 20 mandates that were out there, and he has said we are going to fund about $40 per ADA based on those.
Yeah, but there's no attempt to try to get that in alignment as to what our minimum cost is to provide those services?
Right. And what's been
and
owed to us?
Yeah.
And that we've been underfunded? No. And just as we, you know, we've had this deficit of over 20% where we're receiving 80 cents on the dollar,
right.
Where in the past they would buy that down. That goes away. That goes away, but the whole idea is that after 8 years, it will be paid back, and we will be at the level we were at 7-8, because the deficit not only includes cuts, but it also includes unfunded COLAs that we didn't receive. So that will get us back to that level.
To answer your question again, just to add on, there is no link to that costing with the funding.
So there's a good chance that we'll continue with those deficits, better term, in those particular programs. And that will continue.
Underfunded.
Underfunded mandates.
Right.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. For me, on page 5, I just want to make sure that I was hearing correctly. For the concentration grant, you have to be at above 55%. Our district is at, did I hear that right, 67%?
67, okay. Based on just the free and reduced.
Okay. Okay. And then what I think you mentioned prior, Dr. Coghlan, but I didn't hear it in this presentation, the governor's goal with getting us our money in a timely manner, are they still going to
with the deferrals?
Defer?
Right.
By 2021, are they going to hopefully be done with deferrals? What's the target on that?
They've made progress in reducing those deferrals, and I believe now the deferrals for next year are in, I want to say, March, April, May?
Yeah, just 3 months of deferral.
Okay.
Into the
13-14.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 10% still. That's deferred to July.
Mm-hmm. And those deferrals have never been an actual cut to us. It's just money we should have received this year, and we get it next year, and it's forced us to go out and use our internal funds, or some districts have to go out and borrow.
Right.
It's April, May, and June, sorry.
April, May, and June.
April, May, and June. Apportionment has been deferred to July.
And I'm sorry, what was that last part?
That is apportioned to July. Those
apportionment
for...
I think we should be careful because these deferrals began, I believe it was back in 2002, 2003. Somebody had the idea that instead of giving you your money on June 30th, we'll just give it on July 1st. And then it grew. And so while it could be paid down, it's always possible it could come back again as part of the volatility.
Okay. And let's see. I just wanted to clarify that the supplemental grants was based on low income, which we're looking at free and reduced, EL, English learners.
And foster youth.
And foster youth. Thank you. Okay.
And just so everyone understands, if a student meets all three of those classifications, you don't get three times the money.
That's what I was. Yeah, you only get it once.
You only get it once. It's unduplicated.
Right. And is it 35% still? Did they stick with that percent, or did they change it?
For the supplemental grant?
For the supplemental.
It's 20% of your adjusted base grant.
Uh-huh.
20%. They've reduced it. Okay. Okay, and then... All right, and then I just wanted to make sure I also understand, and I... that they're getting us back to the 2007, 2008 levels. Uh-huh. However, the COLA will cause it to maybe be higher than what it actually was in 2007.
Right. If you to get us back to the 7-8 level, you have to put back all the cuts that they've taken, plus every year the COLA that we did not receive, and that will get us to that level in 2020-21.
Okay, so and you said it's a moving target.
It's a moving target because there will be COLAs between, hopefully, between now and then that will take us up.
Okay. I think that was it for me. Thank you very much.
Just add something?
Yes, Ms. Kaplan.
I think the thing that's really important to remember is although there's more flexibility with how we spend the money, the mandates are not going away. And so when you look at what the categoricals were, we still need to provide those services. So it could be dangerous and be perceived that all this money now is in the general fund and we can spend it any way we want, but we need to keep in mind that we still need to serve the kids that the money is meant for. And it may be a time in the future that we want to have a special meeting, a work session with the board, because before we go into any negotiations, I think it's really important to understand what those monies were meant for and how we want to spend it in this district. It's not extra money that can just go for salaries.
Right.
And I think it's real important that we as you as a board meet with us and kind of help us understand how we want to spend this money, because although there's more flexibility, we still have great needs within our student population.
That's a very good point. Thank you.
And an example of that is, you know, we used to receive about $600,000 for deferred maintenance. That is a line item coming in, is not going to come in. It's part of this $60 million. That need does not go away, but it's put in there. So as part of the additional money that we got received, we still need to be aware of that.
That's an excellent, thank you, excellent point. And you had another question, Ms. Pope?
Well, you somewhat answered it. I wanted to know, in this weighted formula, does it follow the student more closely than it did when it was categoricals? Title I, if you were a Title I school, almost anybody could benefit from those monies. Is it going to more closely track the student now, or?
Well, it's locally decided.
Okay.
So we would make those decisions here.
And then the supplemental grant, it's similar to the categoricals. And the separately funded programs also look to me like they could have been categoricals because special ed is in there.
Right, they've kind of lumped a bunch together but then pulled some of them out.
So the supplemental grant and the separately funded programs are both what we would have called categoricals. Except I don't know if we ever considered nutrition a category.
It's for different demographics. The supplemental grant is just for those unduplicate count of free and reduced. And nutritional program was also for free and reduced, but your special ed was for special education kids.
So the supplemental grant is Title I?
No, this is just, this is
state. Well, because that would be...
It's distributed in a similar way as Title I, but its demographics is also free and reduced foster youth and English learners.
But we're talking about state funding here, and Title I being federally funded.
And so that would be separately funded programs?
Title I is separate. Title I is federal program that's coming in separately. This is just the state component, the supplemental grant.
So
the intention is, again, you have to spend the money for those particular demographic.
So in what you've just presented to us, is there no federal money in here then?
No.
Not on the state revenue.
Not on the state. So when we talk about 60 state revenue of $64 million, total revenue is 76. That's when you start adding in the federal revenue and local revenue. So we were mainly presenting on the state revenue.
So
tonight.
There was additional funding that we really didn't talk about this evening.
Because there has not been a change in that in the federal funding model.
Because we're still underfunded in this.
Right.
Yes.
I think the best way to describe it is when you looked at our budget, we had restricted and unrestricted, and we knew that the restricted could only be spent for this. Now they put the restricted in the unrestricted. We still need to spend on these things, but they're calling it Unrestricted.
Unrestricted.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. I know you worked hard on this. Thank you very much. We appreciate the breadth of information and the diligence, and thank you. Okay, that leads us to the end of our meeting. Is there any board discussion from any of my colleagues? Or discussion? Okay, dates to remember. Welcome back. Who wants to sing the Welcome Back Cotter song? Okay. August 8th. We'll be at West Covina High School at 8 a.m. It's going to be at West Covina High, huh?
Because they're still working on the gym
for Edgewood.
And we did not want to put that at added pressure at the last minute to have to change location.
Yeah, okay. And August 12th will be the first day of school for all of our schools. And August 13th will be our next Board of Education meeting. There being no further business to come before
Can
the board.
Can I just add?
Yes?
Put August 9th in there. That's going to be the open house for the transition program over at Coronado, and it'd be really fun for you to stop by. It's between 4 and 5 on a Friday afternoon.
Okay, at what, between 4 and 5?
It's right next to Parents' Place.
At Coronado? Alrighty. All right, there being no further business to come before the board, the regular meeting of July 23rd, 2013 is adjourned at 9:12 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.